What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Through the Smoke, a Miami Hurricanes podcast here on the 24/7 Sports Network. I'm Andrew Ivins, joined as always by my co-host, David Lake. It is Virginia week. We are going to talk a little bit of that, get into some recruiting on this episode of the podcast, and I don't know, don't have much of a script in place. David, how you holding up?
Good, yeah. We're just kind of freestyling here, but you know, I think there's plenty to talk about here. It is Virginia week. I feel like, you know, there's less buzz than in recent Virginia weeks just because there's a lot of unknowns with this Virginia team, and just on paper, it's not a, you know, on the surface, it's not an impressive Virginia team. But we'll get into it more about why maybe Miami should take this team more seriously than it looks like they are on paper. But yeah, plenty to get into. And I guess, you know, the big news of the week is going to be the wide receiver depth chart, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is something that, I don't know if me and you have been calling for them to make changes at wide receiver. I think we've just been saying that the group's disappointing. But there's a lot of fans, and I'm sure listeners out there, that have been calling for a youth movement. We saw some of the young guys play against Pittsburgh. You know, Keyshawn Smith, I think he got a season-high or career-high in snaps. I don't have the exact number in front of me, I'm sure.
33.
Yeah, 33 snaps. But on Monday, Miami posts their weekly depth chart. And to be fair, like, I can't recall many instances where there was actually things changed under the Mark Richt era, or even like last season under Manny Diaz. Like, it was kind of normally just like the same piece of paper every week. But they put it out on Monday, and pretty much it's a bunch of ors and ors at wide receivers. So I guess, are there, you could say that everyone's a co-starter, or you could just say that they don't have starters right now.
Right. I think, so again, to your point about the depth chart, it is interesting because the previous week, they kind of had a similar situation with co-starters at punt return. And I asked Manny Diaz, no, I'm sorry. They left Mark Pope as the starter at punt return. And I asked Manny Diaz, you know, why did you feel like leaving Mark Pope as the starter is the right thing to do? And he was like, ah, Monday depth charts, you don't need to read anything into those. Like, those don't mean anything. So I guess he has changed his tune. And look, I think when we directly asked Manny about it, he did kind of brush it off. More so, I think the message he's trying to send is, look, snaps are up for grabs. So I don't necessarily think much is going to change in terms of like who trots out there with the starting group, the starting offense. But I do think we're going to see, you know, Keyshawn Smith continue to get around 30 snaps. I think, you know, Rhett Lashley honestly dropped some nuggets. I don't think he meant to drop, but he was basically saying Michael Redding was trending very nicely, and he sustained some little nagging minor injuries, and that's why his snap totals dropped a little bit after that Florida State game. And so now I guess he's kind of put those little nagging injuries behind him, and we might see more of his snap count rising. And then he also said the same of Jeremiah Payton too, to be honest. He said he thought Jeremiah Payton was trending very nicely through that first game against UAB. And, you know, he had that unavailable situation at Louisville, which bled into the Florida State game, right? So, and Lashley kind of said that knocked Jeremiah Payton off track a little bit, and he's hoping to get him going. So, you know, I think the big takeaway is, look, they're trying to send the message to the older guys, look, if you're not getting it done, we're going to give these younger guys opportunities to get it done. So you need to step it up, or else we're going to give these young guys opportunities. And if they make the most of those chances, they are going to be starters. So, and look, it makes sense. And I think one of the big takeaways from the college football weekend this past weekend, from that Alabama-Georgia game in general, is just, if you want to win at the highest level, you need wide receivers to win one-on-one down the field.
Yeah.
And if you can't do that, the ceiling of how good you can be is limited.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it goes back to the preseason or the summer months or the quarantine months when I had Charles Power of 24/7 Sports kind of on the podcast, and he explained how wide receivers are the new arms race in football in general. I mean, look at the NFL now, and you know, like, I mean, if you play fantasy football, you know that it's so much more valuable to have a better, or in some leagues and formats, better to have a good wide receiver than it is a running back. And I just think everyone wants that. When Miami went on that month-long stretch when they added Romello Brinson, Jacoby George, and Breshard Smith to their recruiting class, we brought up how that's a massive deal because you need talented pass catchers. And so that's not surprising that that's your takeaway from watching two blue blood college football programs at the highest level, Alabama and Georgia. Like, they have guys that can get open. And you know, we've touched on George Pickens in the past. I mean, what would Miami's offense look like with him? Or heck, you know, I think a lot of people forget Jermaine Burton was at one time committed to Miami, albeit he never actually visited campus, but they've been in the conversation with some of those guys. They just haven't got any of them in the boat.
Right. And I think another thing worth noting is both Manny and Rhett brought up on their own, they mentioned they felt like Mark Pope did have a good game against Pittsburgh. They were kind of hinting that it was his best game of the season. And, you know, I the thing I find interesting about that is, in my opinion, they used Mark Pope differently. They used him more in the short passing game and the intermediate passing game to try and feed him the ball quickly and allow his yards after catch ability to show, rather than using him. Because I think in every single game prior to this Pitt game, they had used him as that kind of X receiver guy on the outside, taking deep shots to him. And I think we've now learned that Mark Pope isn't that guy. Right. And against Pittsburgh, they didn't take any deep shots to him. So I'm hopeful that this is the new way they are going to use Mark Pope. And it wasn't just like a 1 week, oh, this is the best way to use Mark Pope against Pittsburgh situation.
Well, I just go back to Mark Pope's high school career. I mean, you obviously loved him coming out. I was high on him as well. And while there were a ton of clips of him in 7-on-7 getting past defenses and, you know, Noodle scoring all the time, I mean, literally put his name in YouTube, you'll just find those clips over and over again. Like, his game, I always thought, was more of the get him in space and just kind of let him work. Let him work east-west, not exactly north-south. So, you know, I guess I didn't really put that together, that that's what they kind of did against Pittsburgh. But I've always thought he's that and not some outside guy that's going to go and win balls.
Right, and I think the feeling I get, and I'm reading into this, I think Rhett Lashley is very intrigued by Keyshawn Smith. And I think he believes Keyshawn Smith. And I think he also kind of thinks Jeremiah Payton can potentially be those type of guys. Will they be those type of guys this year? That's going to be the huge question for this Miami offense, right? We talk about the ceiling of what this Miami team can be. Honestly, it kind of boils down to, can they find some sort of deep threat receiver that defenses have to respect? And, you know, I think fair or unfair, it's either going to be redshirt freshman Jeremiah Payton or true freshman Keyshawn Smith that has to step up and take on that role. And it probably is unfair, and it probably is asking too much, but that's just the situation Miami's in right now.
Are you excited about Keyshawn Smith? Like,
yes.
Why? Yes,
he can really run. He really, really, really can run. In terms of like football speed, he might be the fastest receiver on the team. It just, you know, guy in pads, it translates. You can see it. He was getting behind that Pittsburgh defense when he was running those takeoffs. So, you know, again, he's a true freshman. So, and I don't think anyone expected him to be like an Amon Richards freshman All-American type of receiver. But I do think down the road, he's going to be a good receiver for this offense. And it's just a matter of when. And this 2020 offense does need him to start putting it together now. And we'll see if it happens.
So I guess we should not label Jeremiah Payton as a bust yet. Like, we are still, he's dealing with some injuries and that's the issue.
It really did seem like Rhett Lashley is a believer in him. So I don't think we should give up on him yet. It is, again, like, there, to me, it seems to be more like mental busts with him. Like, I mean, we've talked about it, but just him and D'Eriq don't seem to be on the same page a lot. So, you know, is it, we haven't really necessarily seen him have an opportunity to be downfield and fight for a contested catch. I think you and I both think he has that ability somewhat, but we haven't really seen it yet. So again, he was unavailable for the Louisville game. Read into that however you want to read into that. I'm not here to talk about what that means, but he was unavailable against Louisville. And I think the belief around the coaching staff is okay, that kind of hurt his trajectory, you know, for 2 to 3 weeks. Hopefully they can get him back on track now, you know, as we near the second half of the season.
Do they think Brevin Jordan will play this upcoming Saturday? Have we got a status update on him yet?
They didn't. So Manny wasn't asked. I don't think Manny's going to tell us. I'm sure sometimes Manny talks to the media on Wednesday, and I'm sure he will be asked on Wednesday. So we'll see. You know, this is totally me guessing. I would assume that Manny will say he is questionable. And if I'm Miami, I try to win this game without Brevin and, you know, get through the bye week. So you buy more time for Brevin to heal. And then you have him for NC State, Virginia Tech, et cetera, fully healthy or as healthy as possible. That's what I would do. And so we'll see, I guess, what Manny says on Wednesday in regards to Brevin being available. It might not be that serious, though, too. Like, you know, it's believed that it was a shoulder deal that he injured, you know, at Clemson. But, you know, I'll say this, like, we saw him on the field during this recent game against Pittsburgh. He was on the sideline and he wasn't, like, his arm wasn't in a sling or anything like that. So it might not even be that serious of a thing. But again, if it were me, I would try and get through this Virginia game without him, rest him up even more through the bye week, and then get him rolling for that final stretch run.
Something else that was brought up during Monday's Zoom session that I know you wrote about, and it kind of caught my attention. Tyler Van Dyke, the staff seems to still be very high on him, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I asked the question, so.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I set it up. So basically what I wanted to know is, you know, I asked Rhett Lashley, like, look, because I think this is an underrated storyline with this Miami program for the last 15 or so years. I think one of the issues Miami has had is, unless a quarterback is playing, so unless they're playing as a true freshman or redshirt freshman, in my opinion, Miami has not had much success, or the culture's off, however you want to look at it. They haven't had many young quarterbacks who take the right approach to a quote-unquote redshirt year. Now, I understand there are no redshirts this year, but it essentially is a redshirt year for Tyler Van Dyke. And so what I wanted to ask, you know, Rhett Lashley was, look, are you pleased with Tyler's approach during this fall? Like, is he taking it seriously? You know, the preparation, is he trying to improve and get better? Or is he simply going through the motions that, you know, the last 15 years, quite frankly, most freshmen that have redshirted at Miami at the quarterback position have done. And Rhett said, you know, and look, who knows, he might be blowing smoke, but I take him at his word. He said, you know, he's been impressed with Tyler Van Dyke's maturity. He said a lot of times at this midpoint of the fall, he can see a lot of freshmen kind of hit a wall in terms of getting tired or, you know, just disinterested in, you know, putting in the work, even though they're not going to play. But that has not been the case with Tyler. And so, yeah, I do think he is impressed with the overall approach that Tyler is showing in terms of wanting to get better, wanting to improve, wanting to develop. And, you know, that is a good sign. So, you know, I do think it was an interesting, again, I asked it, but I think it was an interesting little nugget that Rhett Lashley told us about Tyler Van Dyke.
The other guy that seemed to generate a bunch of stories and reaction on Twitter, Gerard Harrison Hunt, the defensive lineman. Yeah. Is that the first time he's met with the media since last year's media day where all the freshmen are available?
Yeah, he spoke after the game against Pittsburgh, but you know, those are usually short and sweet and guys are tired. So they're not really, sometimes they don't really love to talk after games, but yeah, he spoke again to us on Tuesday and, you know, we got to dig more into like his background with playing basketball and transitioning to football, et cetera. And he was definitely, he had fun with it talking about basketball. He said, you know, Quincy Roche is a guy that thinks he can beat Jared and one-on-one. And so, and Quincy brought this up too. He said, I want Jared on the court sometime, show him what I can do. So there's a little friendly rivalry there. Jared was asked, who are the best basketball players on the team that you've seen? He mentioned Jeremiah Payton. He liked his hoop skills. And he also mentioned Cam Williams. He said he's kind of a good hooper too. So, he talked about how he honestly didn't play football at all until he was a junior in high school. And even then, he, you know, mainly played tight end that year. And then, you know, he dabbled a little bit, I guess, on the D-line. And he kind of started to focus more on just D-tackle, D-line his senior year of high school. And, you know, things took off from there. He said he only had one. He said growing up, like he was essentially always a guard. He was like a 6'4" guard as a freshman and sophomore in high school, but he just stopped growing tall. But he's, you know, continued to grow wide, I guess you could say.
He doesn't have like a bad body. It's not like he's just,
No, I'm not saying that. But for basketball, you know, basketball
thick,
guys.
Thick.
Right. So, you know, he had to transition to power forward a little bit as his high school career continued in basketball. And so, you know, as that happened, a lot of you know, coaches started saying, hey, you should give football a try, you should give football a try, you should give football a try. So he finally did, and you know, it's definitely paying off for him. He said the one thing that Coach Stroud really is stressing to him this season is just to continue to watch his pad level. He admits that he still plays a little too high at times. So, you know, that's kind of the focus for him throughout this season, as, you know, he admittedly is still very new to the position. So he's just scratching the surface of what he's going to be. You know, you and I have always said, like, day one, we saw him fall camp last year, right? And we were like, yeah, yo, that's RJ McIntosh all over again. And
probably better.
He might be. He might be. He isn't yet. So, but yeah, I mean, I think he might be. I think the comp is definitely a good one, though, no matter what. And he's definitely, we'll see how the rest of this season goes, because like I said, he's just scratching the surface and can get much better, you know, by the end of his career.
I think this is the perfect time for me to maybe drop the story about how like Gerard Harrison Hunt ended up at Miami because it's not like he was right. an initial target from the jump. So if everyone remembers, so he was class of 2019, one of my favorite classes, even though it wasn't ranked high, but he was from Christ the King Middle or school in Middle Village, New York. Miami, they will frequent New York, but it's not like that's a spot that they're always traveling to. But they eventually had to because Jason Blissett, who's another redshirt freshman defensive tackle, he came down for Paradise Camp on his own, flew his own way down, impressed the staff, landed an offer, ended up committing in August. So during Miami's bye week, they kind of like had to, you know, not kind of, I mean, they went up there to see their guy. That's normally what you do in a non-COVID off season or non-COVID season, excuse me. You get out on the road and you see your guys on the bye weeks. While I think, I know Jonathan Patke was up there. Jess Simpson also made his way up there. I mean, they hit some other schools in the area and that's where they kind of found Gerard Harrison Hunt. I mean, he was like real late on, you know, a couple yeah. months before the early signing periods when Miami had got involved. And initially it wasn't like, oh, you know, this is a guy for us. We got to get this guy. It was like, well, we'll recruit him because we're already investing some resources in going up into New York. And then eventually I think the decision was made to just kind of go for it. And I think it's a great get for Miami. And I kind of knew that from the jump. Just to kind of get the mind churning. Some other guys at Miami were kind of like after that cycle. Remember there was a time when Tyler Davis was a big target for them, the kid out right. of Apopka who's now at Clemson. I'm sure everyone saw him this past weekend. He was a target over the summer. So Miami knew that they kind of wanted one or two more defensive tackles to pair with Jason Blissett. Ended up getting Jalar Hawley, who was another Paradise Camp kid. And then they went all in on Gerard Harrison Hunt, who was also considering, I think, Michigan. Penn State was in there. But he could end up being like the gem of the class. And, you know, I don't want to say it fell into Miami's lap, but like he wasn't initially someone that they identified. And like, I think he's just an absolute stud.
Tell me if I remember this right. I mean, you actually do recruiting. Was Penn State sniffing around? Did they slow play him? Do I remember that right? Like Penn State was kind of involved with Jared?
Oh, no, they were. I mean, he took an official visit there in December. Then he took an official visit to Miami when Miami had everyone. They had a ton of kids in that weekend. Keon Zipper, Lloyd Summerall. And then, you know, there was just a weird vibe and atmosphere because that's kind of when Miami ended that season bad and they ended up going to the Pinstripe Bowl. And we know right. the result there to Wisconsin. But what's funny is when Miami was in New York, Gerard Harrison Hunt had the opportunity to go see them practice. Right. So then, you know, Miami loses that game. Mark Richt ends up stepping down. Manny Diaz leaves for Temple. Manny Diaz is rehired. Well, with all that transition and change, the NCAA allows kids to take another official visit. So Miami got him to take another official visit with his teammate, Adam El-Gamal, the offensive lineman. Committed on February 1st, signed 5 days later, and the rest is history. And I do also have to throw in there that Craig Kuligowski met with him in January as well when he was
yeah.
with Crimson Tide. So
yeah, I was gonna say I thought I remembered like Bama sniffing around too, right?
Yes, they were.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, it's not like he was kind of a late bloomer, but it's not like he was you know, oh, who's this basketball guy and Miami was the only one. Like there were a lot of big time programs kind of still after him.
Right. I think what he was a plan like B for a lot of schools where you keep recruiting and then right. you have your elite guys. And then like, if the decision is made, hey, we need to get this guy, let's go get him. you know, Miami didn't offer till November 29th. That's very late. Michigan offered a week later, Alabama a week after that. Same with some other schools. And, you know, he took an official visit to Ohio State. Arizona State was at one time considered a front runner in that recruitment. Just a wild recruitment. And I don't know. It's one of those stories that makes recruiting and the whole following recruiting fun, because he's a guy that, like I said, really wasn't on the radar, and he wouldn't have been on the radar if Jason Blissett didn't decide that, hey, he wanted to come to Paradise Camp and earn himself a spot at Miami.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting too. Like, you know, he was, like you said, he was a plan B for pretty much every school. And, I mean, you could even honestly say that about Miami. And he's going to leave Miami most likely as a NFL draft pick who's, you know, potentially could get drafted higher than a lot of these plan A's that these schools had over him. So recruiting's interesting. And again, like, it's one of those deals too where it's like, you never know. A lot of programs don't know. I would say it's different with Miami because they do recruit so much locally. So they do know what they're going to get when they get the guys they get. But like, you and I never really saw Jared Harrison Hunt
never
before fall camp. And so that first fall camp, we were like, whoa, this guy, this guy is a dude. So it is an interesting story.
And final thing on him, remember last year, Manny kept saying that he felt like the three interior defensive linemen they got were like really good. And everyone was like, what? Like, you know, it's a bunch of three stars. And I think a lot of people thought Jason Blissett was going to be the guy.
Right.
Just, you know. Right. Let's take a quick break, get into Virginia on the other side and talk a little recruiting, current 2021 recruiting.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Okay, David, Virginia week. Miami playing them at home for the second consecutive season. That's got to be pretty rare, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, never. You never get to do that, except it's 2020 and things are weird and different. And so, yeah, I mean, Miami, Virginia always has, well, not always, but they've played Miami tough typically during this Bronco Mendenhall era. It was one of, you know, was it their best win of 2019? It probably was, right? Because
I was their like only win over a ranked team.
Right. I mean, Virginia went on to win the Coastal and, you know, Miami squeaked out, I believe it was like 17-9, something ridiculous like that, with Nikosi Perry at quarterback. So it was their best win of 2019, and Miami gets to run it back again at Hard Rock Stadium against them.
The one thing I remember from last year's Virginia game, aside from it being on a Friday night, aside from Miami wearing all white at home, was the line was like super weird. I think it was like
they were still favored, right?
Miami was like two points.
Yeah,
and I was like, I thought
it was so, because things were a train wreck then, right? Like, didn't they just lose to Virginia Tech?
Yes.
Oh, and, yeah. And
It was lowest of lows.
But Vegas was right. So, you know, this week, Miami, speaking of Vegas, is this week's game, Miami opens as a 10.5 point favorite, correct?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the number. I don't know what it is now, so don't put me on the spot.
Yeah. So, but anyways, you know, it just shows how Vegas thinks Miami is a somewhat of a strong favorite again. And, you know, I think it is an indication of how much Virginia is struggling right now. And a lot of it, honestly, is due to injuries because they enter this game with a 1-3 record. I don't think they are a 1-3 caliber team. I think that's kind of misleading. But they have been hit hard by the injury bug, starting at quarterback where, you know, Brennan Armstrong, we talked about in the last podcast, he's been in the concussion protocol, you know, for a concussion he sustained 2 games ago. So then this past game, which they lost to Wake Forest, he was not available due to the concussion protocol. And on Monday, Bronco Mendenhall said he was still in the concussion protocol that day. And, you know, his status was up in the air. He might be able to return for Miami. He might not. My understanding is that Virginia generally plays it pretty safe or slow, I guess I should say, with concussion protocol type stuff. They don't really rush their guys back, which is good. Shouldn't do that. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Brennan. I think Bronco Mendenhall talks again either on Wednesday or Thursday, and I'm sure he'll be asked to give an update then. But you know, after Brennan Armstrong, there's really not many great options, I would say. I think so far what Virginia's tried to do is piece together things with a 3-man rotation. So you got a guy named Lindell Stone, who's kind of like the thrower of the group. He's not like a strong arm quarterback or anything, but he's kind of a distributor. A guy who understands where to go with the ball. Again, doesn't have the most arm talent, but I guess he would be the quote-unquote passer. And then you got two guys, Keaton Thompson, who's a Mississippi State transfer, about 6'4", 215, that can bring some running ability. This past week against Wake Forest, they used him a lot as like a wildcat type of option. My understanding is that he sustained kind of a shoulder injury to his throwing shoulder during fall camp. And so that's why I guess he was kind of knocked out of the starting quarterback race during fall camp. And there's kind of some uncertainty of whether or not that shoulder injury is cleared up and he's able to throw better now, but he still hasn't really attempted many passes to this point. So when he's in the game, it would be kind of like a wildcat look. And then the other guy they're using is true freshman Ira Armstead, who I guess the feeling around Virginia is he's got the biggest arm of the group and he is the most athletic of the group, but he is a true freshman. And I guess at times when he's out there, his head will be spinning a little bit because things are happening fast. So, you know, it's not an ideal quarterback situation for Virginia entering this game. And, you know, the way it does play out is going to significantly impact how the game goes. If Brennan Armstrong plays the starter, Virginia's a real team and they are good enough to take down a Miami team that, you know, if Miami tries to sleepwalk through Virginia, Brennan Armstrong's good enough to pop them. The other guys, I'm not so sure, but it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. No, you got to mention, too, as well, that Joe Reed has graduated from Virginia. He was a pretty good player for them, and obviously Bryce Perkins as well. I was going to say, though, you mentioned not being able to sleepwalk. Like, there is talent on the defensive side of the ball, for sure.
There is. And that's another interesting point with this Virginia team, too. They've been hit by injuries in their secondary. So a lot of their starters in the secondary have been dealing with injuries on and off. And so that has forced, I guess, the move, I guess, it should be phrased, the move that the Virginia coaching staff has made in light of those injuries happening is they have asked their impressive linebackers to drop back more into coverage and help in that regard. So guys like Charles Snowden, very good. Noah Taylor, who's another edge outside linebacker that's 6'5". So Charles Snowden, 6'7". They're asking these guys more to drop back during these injury situations they're dealing with in the secondary. There hasn't been much success in doing that. And so the feeling around Virginia now is like, all right, we're going to scrap that and we're going to get back to letting these guys be aggressive and whatever happens, happens. Because, you know, just like points per game, Virginia is allowing way more points than they typically do during the Bronco Mendenhall era. They're allowing a lot more big plays than they typically do during the Bronco Mendenhall era. So the defense, you're right, it does have some NFL personnel, but for whatever reason, they're not playing at the typical Bronco Mendenhall level that we've come to know in the last 2 or 3 years.
I didn't know that about Snowden being asked to drop more into coverage. I was kind of wondering why there hasn't been more NFL draft type hype, but that would make sense. I think he's more of like a, you know, edge rusher type guy.
He is, yeah.
Defensive catalyst at the next level. So I guess we'll get more into it on a later podcast, but just your initial keys to the game for Miami, aside from the usual not coming out flat.
Well, yeah, I mean, as we know with this Miami program, that is a big one. But look, Virginia, it's going to be very similar to Pittsburgh in terms of what they want to try and force Miami to do offensively. Like, I'm expecting Virginia to try and stop the run first and force Miami to win the game passing. Now, Virginia's secondary, I think, is playing worse than what Pittsburgh's secondary is. So we'll see if Miami can take advantage of that. It's going to be, I think the way to look at it is like Pittsburgh light, right? So like, I think Pittsburgh's probably a little better, but like Virginia might be having to play their backup quarterback just like Pittsburgh did. And, you know, Pittsburgh's defense wanted to stop the run, force you to beat them with explosive plays. That's kind of what Virginia's going to do. Virginia's going to do it a little differently. Their scheme is differently, but just big picture wise, that's kind of what it's going to be, kind of a similar style of game, in my opinion.
It's funny. I know we've moved on from the whole Gerard Harrison Hunt conversation, but I did just come across something. One other interior defensive lineman that Miami was after that cycle was Braylon Ingraham. I don't think he has done anything at Alabama, excuse me. You want to get into Jake Garcia and Amari Daniels?
Yeah, let's do it. So some big recruiting news, right? So let's start with quarterback target Jake Garcia. The saga continues, his his quest to play a senior season in the state of Georgia. Tell us what we need to know.
Well, I mean, there's reports and some people have indicated, you know, the Stadium podcast or whatever has reported that Jake is transferred to Grayson High School in Georgia. I think that's outside of Atlanta in Loganville. Yeah. A traditional powerhouse, same school that Jakai Clark came from. They said he's transferred there. He's eligible, and he'll be able to play some games this season. Now, I think there's only 3 regular season games left for Grayson, which is, I don't really know how that's going to work. But this would be his 5th high school to date, which is a little, I don't know. I don't know how that transcript's going to work out, but that is the update with him. What we got to throw in there that the AGC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, they wrote a story Tuesday morning or afternoon stating that, you know, basically nothing's official. No one has enrolled at Grayson, and the people at Valdosta say he's still enrolled at Valdosta. So something to track. I reached out to the people I know in Jake Garcia's camp, and which isn't his family, just, you know, some people around him. And they said that they thought he was still at Valdosta. So who really knows what's going on? But I mean, there's probably some people wondering why is he so set on, you know, trying to play games. And it's, I think I've touched on this before, but you know, that senior year is so crucial for a quarterback's development. And to only play one game after being limited the season before while out in California isn't exactly ideal. And, you know, USC, where he's committed, they offered another quarterback, another 2021 quarterback. Was it last week or the week before? And some people are wondering, like, what's up with that? You know, they're saying that that offer has nothing to do with Jake Garcia. But as I wrote in an insider on Sunday for the VIP subscribers at InsideTheU.com, you know, I've had the theory introduced to me that maybe, you know, USC's a little concerned that Jake Garcia isn't playing a senior season. Like, that's not ideal, you know, in terms of your quarterback, because he's going to enroll early. So who knows? This is getting weirder by the day. I'm going to be pissed. Actually, I'm not going to be pissed, but like, it's going to suck that we took all these photos of him in this Valdosta gear and then he just enrolls at Grayson 2 weeks later.
Hey, it is what it is. But yeah, hopefully, you know, whatever he wants to do, hopefully works out. If he does want to play at Grayson, you know, and it is able to play, I'm here for it. It's 2020. As I've mentioned, you know, with his Valdosta situation, like, the dude moved from California to Georgia just so he could play, because 2020 is weird. They're not playing high school football in California. So he's just trying to get that done. So I don't understand why Georgia's giving him such a hard time, but it is what it is. Anything else on Jake, or move on to Amari Daniels?
Move on to the next one.
So running back target out of Miami Central, Amari Daniels, I guess he's set to make a decision this week, right? But he dropped a top two.
Yes. So Amari's been saying for a while now that the plan is to have a decision or make a commitment before the first game of his senior season. Miami Central is set to face Miami Northwestern in a epic season opener on Friday. So there's talk of Amari committing on Thursday. He told me, or he told me, yes, he was committing this week, and then didn't answer when. A little bit after that, he put out a top two of Georgia and Texas A&M. Surprising, I think, surprising to the people that work inside the football offices in Coral Gables. We'll see. I mean, you know, I thought Miami had made up a ton of ground a month ago and was kind of trending, but Amari seems to be taking a calculated decision, as closely studied all the offenses of these schools that he's considering. And now it sounds like, I mean, his top two is Texas A&M and Georgia. You know, again, I wrote on Sunday for our VIP subscribers that I was hearing the Bulldogs had picked up some steam in that recruitment. I mean, my crystal ball is still on Miami. It's a confidence score of a one. I'm going to move it somewhere. I just don't know where yet. Yeah, but is this a big blow for Miami? I don't think so. You have Thad Franklin committed. If you don't get Amari Daniels, this probably keeps Thad absolutely in the class. And after these past 2 weeks, I know Miami has faced the two of like the top five rushing defenses in the country, but you know, Cam Harris, his draft stock was pretty high after the first three games, but I haven't seen anything out there anymore. Like, I don't think what he did against Clemson and then what he did against Pittsburgh screams leave early.
Do you think Miami will go after a running back, you know, to pair Thad Franklin with, or do you think they would just call it a class with that?
I think they would just call it a class.
Okay. And so Georgia, Texas A&M, Georgia's making a late surge. What do you think it just does boil down to, like, he likes the way those offenses run the ball?
Well, I think he's also, you know, maybe not concerned, but, you know, look, like Jalen Knighton and Don Chaney are still playing, and both those guys, like, this year doesn't even technically count for them. So I think that would have to be taken into consideration.
Right, right. Yeah, because, you know, like you said, there's no like, everyone gets a free year this year. So Jalen Knighton, Don Chaney would still be true freshmen next year. And so that does make a bit of a logjam. But interesting nonetheless, that's why South Florida recruiting never ceases to be entertaining and fun to follow.
And I will throw this in. I mean, like, you know, just because he has this top two doesn't mean, like, Miami's completely out of it. I know Miami was scheduled to speak with him on Monday. It's recruiting in South Florida, you know. A lot of smoke screens get tried to thrown around this time of the year, so we'll see. Like, I'm not saying, like, oh, Miami's going to be the pick, but still one you probably got to monitor if you're a big recruiting fan, because, again, literally anything could happen.
Anything else recruiting-wise or high school football-wise? You went to some big games over the weekend. Anything stand out in that regard with Miami targets or big-time players?
I think James Williams is pretty good. You know, he made a kind of a boneheaded mistake in the special teams department on Friday night. American Heritage Plantation was taking on Jacksonville Trinity Christian Academy. In a real, I mean, that's probably one of the better games or matchups you're going to get across the state this season. 0-0 game throughout. And I've told this to so many different people, and they're like, how was that entertaining? And I'm like, I don't know.
Intense.
Yeah, there's a different style of football, like, in the Sunshine State. Everyone puts their best players on defense. Like, none of your, like, you know, for some reason, that's what everyone wants to do. Like, yeah, in Texas, the Big 12, there's no defenses. That's because everyone wants to play offense. And then in the SEC and parts of the ACC, there's all these good defenses because all the good players grow up playing defense. So,
right.
It was a good slugfest. And Trinity, I mean, no one was moving the ball. And Trinity Christian decided to punt, I think, with 18 seconds left. James was back there. It bounced off him and basically set up a short field goal for Trinity Christian Academy. You know, then the entire plantation special teams defensive unit tried to block the kick, ended up jumping off sides three times, and Trinity Christian hit a field goal to win it. So James was verbally upset. I will say, if he does indeed sign with Miami, he's going to be not like a team leader, but like, he is someone that will absolutely care about winning or losing. Right. And give me those guys in my locker room. One more nugget from that game, and I just wrote this on the site for our VIP subscribers, but by the time this podcast is up, I'm sure it'll be tweeted out for free everywhere else. Miami has made contact with Minnesota offensive tackle commit Austin Barber. I don't know, David, if you remember this kid from the Under Armour Orlando camp.
I do, actually. Yeah,
he's like legit 6'6", 6'7". When we saw him then, you know, had a little pudge to him, but he has leaned out a ton. He's now down to 295 pounds. Moves really well, I thought. I thought he was pretty dang good on Friday night, and Miami's made contact. Now, they have limited spots left, but I think if they can find an elite, you know, not elite, like five-star, but if they can find a serviceable tackle that they like, then they're probably going to jump at it. And maybe that's Austin Barber. I mean, I was talking to a college staffer in a Power 5 program, and they agreed with my assessment of Barber, and he's someone we're going to move up in the rankings on Wednesday.
So you feel like he is definitely a tackle?
Yeah. Oh, tackle all the way.
Okay.
You know, you got him and Michael McLaughlin. You would be in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I saw some Twitter videos, I mean, of Michael McLaughlin throwing up some serious weight. That was interesting. I'm curious when you go out and see him this season, I'm curious what your thoughts are on him and how he's developing.
Well, I got it right in front of me on my whiteboard. 9 days from now, I will
have him
penciled in. All right, so make sure you guys, you know, subscribe, rate the podcast, leave us some reviews, and check out the website inside the u.com. I'm sure there'll be tons of good stuff. And like we I just kind of teased, like, football in Miami-Dade gets started on Friday. So I'm sure Gabby and myself will be out making the rounds.
Yeah, check out the Dime Life Challenge, too, that we got going on, the Pick'ems. You can join at any time. You know, you're going to be behind with some points, probably. But, hey, if you get on a heater, you could catch up to us for sure. You could definitely pass me up.
I'll tell you who crushed me was Florida State.
Yeah, I picked that one, too. But, I mean, who saw that coming?
Not I. Not I, my friend.
So, yeah, sign up, CB it through the smoke. I'm sure there's links out there on the Twitter pages and whatnot. So, Dime Life, check out their apparel too, dimelife.com. And thanks, everyone, for the listen.
I'll talk to you guys later.
Later.